Okay, tonight is September 2nd. Rabbi Feldman's here. Tonight's year is sponsored by Miriam and Izzy Solomon to commemorate the yard site of Izzy's father, Tuvia Ben Yaakov.
Okay, good evening. The agenda is to talk about part two of Kriyat Shema, but I think most people here were not here last week, so we'll probably be heavy on the Chazar to accommodate that. So let's talk a little bit about the obligation of Kriyat Shema, which is one of our most fundamental obligations. It's essentially the Pledge of Allegiance of the Jewish people. And we generally assume that Kriyat Shema is a biblical obligation, it's a mitzvah min haTorah. Even though that is the common assumption, it wasn't the only way to see things. The Gemara records machlokes about this. The Gemara Maseches Brachos tells us that there is a debate on this point, and it affects the question of, as we often see in these cases, what do you do if you're not sure if you have to recite it or not? Let's say you're in a situation where you don't remember if you said Kriyat Shema, for whatever reason you're not clear whether you have an obligation to say it, so then you find a machlokes in the Gemara whether or not you're required to say it. And as the Gemara spells out, this seems to revolve around the question of whether it's min haTorah or midrabbanan. Do we generally assume that since seika d'oraisa l'chumra, that if it's a mitzvah min haTorah, therefore we require you to say it just to be safe? Or do we assume that you're not obligated to say it if you're not sure, because it's apparently a mitzvah d'rabbanan and seika d'rabbanan l'kula? So while again the dominant view in Rishonim has emerged that Kriyat Shema is a mitzvah min haTorah, in the Gemara it's machlokes, and there were Rishonim who also took this view. There were a couple of the Balei HaTosfos, there are a few Tosfos in scattered places, in Masechet Sota and Menachos, Tosfos Kama, a couple of the Balei HaTosfos who take the view that Kriyat Shema is actually the Rabbanan. And they then have to answer the question that even if you are okay with that part, but you have to then answer up a lot of Gemara. Basically the first three Pakim of Shas are all interpreting various Pesukim to tell us how to observe the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. And if that's the case, so then you're going to tell me they're all asmachtas. Each one of these Pesukim is not really what it means. It's all drasha. So it's hard to believe that. So some of the Tosfos can suggest that there is, according to everyone, a mitzvah to say something every day. It just doesn't necessarily have to be Kriyat Shema. And as the Shagashayi discusses, that there is a mitzvah of recitation of Pesukim in the morning and in the afternoon. And the idea that it should be specifically Kriyat Shema, that's the part that's Drabban. So that is one opinion, that Kriyat Shema isn't even really min haTorah. But again, the majority view is that Kriyat Shema essentially is min haTorah, but that still leaves a lot to fight about, because the question then still is, what does that mean? What do we refer to when we say Kriyat Shema is min haTorah? So according to some Rishonim, such as the Ramban and others, it means that the first pasuk, just the first pasuk, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, that's min haTorah, and that other things are not. Other things would be apparently midrabbanan. There are a number of Rishonim seem to take this view. The next stage would be, Rashi sounds like this, a few others sound like this, that the whole first paragraph is min haTorah, which has its own logic to it as well, because that's what we find together in Parshas Veschanan, Shema in the first paragraph. So maybe that's where we find the words, the Dibart Abam, that's a reference to that obligation, that we should say that paragraph as a mitzvah min haTorah. It's interesting that this is, as we pointed out, this is something that we don't really publicize in Yeshiva so much, but there is a comment that Yosef Meach makes in his comments on Hilchos Talmud Torah, that the Gemara has a statement that you shouldn't be talking about Dvarim B'Talim, about things that are not Torah related, because the Pasuk said, Vibart Abam, Velo B'Dvarim B'Talim. You should talk about these things, about Torah, and not about other things. So the Yosef Meach notes that drasha seems to be assuming the Pasuk is referring to Talmud Torah, and that we who paskin that the pasuk is actually a reference to Kriyat Shema actually would then probably not hold from that drasha. So that drasha is probably not a libud d'hilchosa for we who assume Kriyat Shema is min haTorah. Again, it's not something we publicize in the yeshivas too much. But in any event, so if we assume that that's a reference to an obligation to recite Kriyat Shema, so we could understand the position of those Rishonim who would maintain that that whole first paragraph is min haTorah and that that's where the obligation is. So an interesting question also is then, so what's the story with Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Solom Vayed, which is kind of stuck in there in the middle? That is not there in Parshas Veschanan, and how does that fit in with our vision of it being Minas Torah. So we're probably all familiar with the story about where this comes from. The Gemara tells us in the Sefer Tzachim that Yaakov Avinu, in the end of his life, was desirous of revealing to his descendants what the future held. He wanted to show them the cage. And as he was about to say it, so he lost his Ruach HaKodesh. And he thought that maybe his descendants are not worthy of hearing it. So he felt very upset about this. And they said to him, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You should know, Yisrael, Yaakov, you should know that we're just as firm as you are. Yishem Shein Belibach Elecha, Kach Ein Belibenu Elecha. Just like you only believe in one God, we also only believe in one God, so don't get so worried about us. So he was reassured about that, and his response was, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso Le'olam Vod. So the Gemara says, I don't really know what to do with this sentence. But on the one hand, Moshe didn't say it, so we don't really have a place for it there. But on the other hand, Yaakov did say it, so what should we do with it? So the Gemara has this conclusion, which is also a little hard to understand, that we should whisper it. And apparently whispering it solves the problem. So, well, how does it solve the problem? We don't really know. But Noda Behuda, in his commentary to the Gemara, is called Tzlach, Shilu Nefesh Chaya, named his commentary after his mother. His mother was Chaya, so he had a memorial for Chaya. This tape is called Shilu Nefesh Chaya. We call it by its initials, the Tzlach. So the Tzlach, in his commentary to Brachos, writes, Achirish Mahalacha, which will be the second thing we'll mention that we don't really publicize, which we don't publicize in the shuls, and that is the Tzlach Chiddush, that maybe whispering is not a hefsek. If you whisper during davening, maybe that's not called a hefsek, and that's what the Gemara is telling us. And if the Gemara wants to know, how can we insert this phrase there, which is not really part of the text? Isn't it a hefsek? Isn't it an interruption? So no, whispering helps, because otherwise it's a big problem. Because the Mishnah tells us in the beginning of the second paragraph of Brachos, the Gemara has a whole complicated system there, which you really need a chart to try to keep track of. But the Gemara says that there are times when you can interrupt in the middle of Kriya Shema. And Yerushalmi actually has this drash on the Yibarta Ram, Mikan Sheishlecha Rishot L'daberba. This shows us that you do have permission to talk in the middle of Kriya Shema, as opposed to Tfilah Shema. That's why you can't really interrupt for anything short of actual Pikuach Nefesh. But when it comes to Shema, so you can interrupt Shema for greeting people. And there's a whole sliding scale of standards that, first of all, depends who you're greeting, and it depends where you are in the middle of Kriya Shema. That if you're in the middle of, if you're in between a parak, if you're in between two prakim, let's say the second parak and the third parak, so then that's called Bein HaPrakim, that's a little bit of a more lenient standard. And if you're in the middle of one of the paragraphs, the Amsa, so that's a more stringent standard. So that's on one side of the equation. And the other side of the equation is who it is who you want to talk to. Is it somebody who has got a status of Yura? He's got a status of, you could translate that as fear, or you could translate that as reverence. Some of the Rishonim see that as somebody who you're obligated to have reverence for, like your Rebbe or like your parents. And others, Rashi sounds like it's somebody afraid is going to kill you. So later, some of the other Rishonim, the later Svarim say they don't understand that, because they're afraid is going to kill you, so then it's Pikuach Nefesh, and you could do it for sure. So why does Rashi need to tell us that? So Rashash, in his commentary, explains what Rashi means. It doesn't mean the guy's going to kill you for not staying alone in. It means somebody who could kill you in general, so you want to stay on his good side, so you want to greet him, so that's one type of person. Another type of person is somebody who's demanding a special covet. And then there's also everybody. Everybody else also is somewhere on the list of priorities that you can greet them. And then the third factor is whether you're initiating or responding. So the whole complicated mix of factors, where sometimes you can initiate, sometimes you can respond. It depends whether it's a general person, a person you're afraid of, a person who you have respect for, and whether you're in the middle of a paragraph or between a paragraph. Very complicated formula to figure out what you can do and what you can't do. So there we normally find that in the middle of a parak, so you can't interrupt. So the first paragraph of Kriya Shema, together with Shema Yisrael, that's all one paragraph. That's all considered to be one section. So normally we couldn't insert anything else there. So to have Baruch Shem placed in there is a big chiddush. So what exactly that means is a question. And there's a whole discussion the Achronim have. Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this, and the Leva of Ram has an important tshuva about this. Is it that this becomes a part of Kriya Shema, somehow becomes a part of the obligation? Or is it that for whatever reason it's permissible and required to say it there, but it's not actually a part of Kriya Shema? And we find that many Achronim say that it has the same halachas as the first pasuk. The first pasuk is generally understood that you can't interrupt for anything. The first pasuk has its own special demands of kavana that are separate from the whole rest of Kriya Shema. And many understand that Baruch Shem is included in that din. Whatever halachas applies to the first pasuk applies to Baruch Shem also. So that has its own interesting status, somehow acquires this position as together with the first pasuk of Kriya Shema. So anyway, so that's one shita that you find, that the first paragraph of Kriya Shema is Min HaTorah. Then you have the next stage, that the first two paragraphs of Kriya Shema is Min HaTorah. And this is the view that Pri Chodesh, like the Pri Chodesh, his commentary in the back of the Shulchan Aruch, he says he presents all the opinions of there, and he says he thinks this is the most accurate, that this makes sense, that both sections have a reference with Divarta Bam, with Daber Bam. So in these two sections, you have an obligation, Min HaTorah, of Kriya Shema. And then you have another view that all three paragraphs of Kriya Shema are Min HaTorah, and it sounds like this is what the Rambam is saying. But it's also apparently the case that it doesn't really mean that all three paragraphs are obligatory as Kriya Shema, because it's hard to understand how the third paragraph is really a part of Kriya Shema in itself, even though that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says to raise that Kriya Shema. So Soloveitchik has a whole shiur about this in Shiur Mosaic Avamori, where he explains that it's really from a different mitzvah. Now we have a mitzvah also of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, which has the same time slot as Kriya Shema. It's every day and every night. So that also is fulfilled at the same opportunity, and the third paragraph makes reference to Yetzias Mitzrayim, so therefore it fulfills that idea. And as the Rav explains there, it's not just that this is a convenience, that we have two mitzvahs that take up the same slot, so might as well have them done together, but that the mitzvah here is to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim as part of the Kriya Shema experience. So part of our Kabbalah Shel Malchus Shamayim is that we also recognize the special providence that God took us out of Mitzrayim, and that's all a part of the experience. So that's the other view. And then there are those who maintain that there is really an obligation on a minimal level, an obligation of, let's say, one pasuk, but anything more you do is also included in the mitzvah Mahatara, which is a very interesting structure. That's the way the Kiryas Sefer understands it. And that gives a lot of room to speculate what exactly is going on with Kriya Shema. That perhaps Kriya Shema is essentially this declaration of allegiance, really, and it can be fulfilled in a minimal way, but everything that's added to it in the more expanded version is also a part of this obligation, apparently. It's a very interesting idea. And then we also have within that the idea of Birchos Kriya Shema. Birchos Kriya Shema is a whole other creation. It sounds like from the phrase that it's a bracha recited on the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. But we find that many Rishonim didn't understand it to be that way. And many clues in Halacha also point in a different direction, that they're not really brachos attached to the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, but rather they are tfilos that Chazal instituted that are put together with Kriya Shema, and that really, for all intents and purposes, they probably follow the halachas of tfila and not the halachas of Kriya Shema. So for example, as far as Zman is concerned, and we'll talk about that in a minute, as far as Zman Kriya Shema is concerned, so we find that the brachos probably follow the Zman of Tfilah and not the Zman of Kriya Shema. The Gemara has a statement which is a little hard to understand. The Gemara says that you have the Zman for Kriya Shema, but if you miss the Zman, somebody who reads after this time, so he doesn't lose out, it's like somebody who's learning Torah. So on one level we understand that. And he's saying that it's not like a bracha, which you can only say at the right time, because Kriya Shema is psukim from the Torah, so you can say psukim at any time. So even if it's already past the Zman Kriya Shema, so he's still able to recite these psukim anyway, still like Talmud Torah. But what does it mean, lo hifsid? You haven't lost. Of course you lost. You lost the mitzvah of Kriya Shema that you're supposed to do in the right time. So what does it mean, lo hifsid? The Gemara interprets that, lo hifsid habrachas. You didn't lose the brachas, you can still recite the brachas. Which, again, is probably a clue that it's not attached to the mitzvah. Because I could believe, let's say, shofar. So if I don't get a chance to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, I could blow shofar all year round. All year round, doesn't hurt to blow shofar whenever you want. So I'm not going to make a bracha. Let's go a shofar today. I'll ski a shofar. I'm not going to make a bracha on shofar when it's not Rosh Hashanah. So the fact that you make the birchas kriya shema outside of the structure of the mitzvah, so that's also a clue that it's not really a bracha on a mitzvah of kriya shema. But then the chiddush on top of that is, it sounds like from the Gemara, so you can recite Birchas Kriya Shema all day. That's what it sounds like. If you miss the Zman, you can still say Zman Kriya Shema. So a lot of the Rishonim, most of the Rishonim didn't understand that way, and they understood that it was tied into Zman Tfilah. So you can recite the Brachas of Kriya Shema as long as it's Zman Tfilah, it's an extra hour, and after that you can't. And there were some Rishonim who saw it until Chatzos. This is also another version of Zman Tfilah. So Birchas Kriyas may have their own rules, and that's something we'll also try to take a look at. So there's also a discussion, which we touched upon a little bit last week, the question of whether Kriyat Shema is one mitzvah or two mitzvahs. So we have a mitzvah of Kriyat Shema at night and a mitzvah of Kriyat Shema during the daytime. And it's machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban, whether we count that as one mitzvah or whether we count that as two. It could be related, some of the latest scholars suggest that it could be related to the question of what exactly is the source. Is the source of the Dibarta Bam. If you look in the way we've shown him count the mitzvah, some say the mitzvah Torah of Kriyat Shema from the Pasuk says the Dibarta Bam, and some say it's because the Pasuk says V'shach B'chav Kumecha. What's the difference? It's from the same place. So some suggest that it makes a difference, because the Dibarta Bam, that's one mitzvah. And V'shach B'chav Kumecha is then a modifier. It tells you, you do this mitzvah then, you do it the other time, that's the time for this one mitzvah. While if V'shach B'chav Kumecha is the source, then it means that the mitzvah of the Shachbucha, a mitzvah of Kriyat Shema at night, and a mitzvah of the Kumecha, a mitzvah of Kriyat Shema during the daytime. So maybe that's a possible source for the idea. There's a sefer called Kunshus Pnei Yehoshua that has a lengthy discussion about this. Kunshus Pnei Yehoshua is a sefer, it's all on the first Amud of Masechet Brachos, so on Beis Mara'ov. Yeah, there's a couple of essays on that one Amud, so he talks about this question at length. And that could possibly be connected, but it also ties into the question of the Zman Kriyat Shema. So we have a Zman Kriyat Shema at night and a Zman Kriyat Shema during the daytime. So Zman Kriyat Shema at night, so it's generally agreed that we don't really have a Sol Zman Kriyat Shema at night. There's three opinions in the Mishnah. The first opinion is Rabbi Yeshua, and nobody passes like that, Lahalacha, and that is that it's the first Ashmorah of the night. And Gemara is not sure whether an Ashmorah is a third or a fourth, but the first fraction of the night, that's the Zman of Kriyat Shema, and we don't follow that opinion. So what opinion do we follow is two other opinions in the Mishnah, which it comes out from the Mishnah that they're essentially the same. Now on the one hand is the view of Rabban Gamliel, that Kriyat Shema is all night. And then there's a view of Chachamim that Kriyat Shema goes until midnight, until Chatzos. But what's clear, or what comes out from the Mishnah there, as Rabban Gamliel explained, is that the Chachamim really agree with me, but they feel that we have to take a protective measure, that we have to make a shiag, that we're afraid that somebody's going to say, well, I can read Kriyat Shema all night, so I'll take a nap, and I'll read a book, and I'll eat dinner, and I'll do whatever I want, and then at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'll say Kriyat Shema, and then I'll end up falling asleep, and he's not going to say it. So therefore, we have to make a shiag, we have to say, no, you can't do it like that, you have to feel it's your responsibility to say Kriyat Shema before Chatzos, which itself already is a big chiddush, because normally, gezeiros that we find, for the most part, usually in the context of prohibitions. You shouldn't come to violate a prohibition. And here, to have a gezeira for a positive mitzvah is an unusual type of idea. And not all Rishonim agreed that it exists. Not all Rishonim paskin like Chachamim, and it's machlokus among the Rishonim, whether we paskin like Chachamim, or whether we paskin like Rav Gamliel, and do we say that there is a gezeira that Kriyat Shema should be said before Chatzos. And Rabbeinu Yonah has a statement which takes this further and started a whole taram in the later svarim, that Rabbeinu Yonah says that what if Chachamim mean when they say you can't say Kriyat Shema after Chatzos? So they mean even b'di'evet. If let's say it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you say I haven't said Kriyat Shema yet, so maybe I should say it now. So everyone else would say, yeah, for sure you should say it now. But says Rabbeinu Yonah, and according to Chachamim, they canceled it. They say uprooted it. Just like they said, you shouldn't blow shofar on Shabbos, even though the Torah tells you to do that. And they say you shouldn't take a luv on Shabbos, even though the Torah tells you to do that. So to here, they say you shouldn't read Kriyat Shema after Chatzos. But it's very unusual, because it's not really similar to the shofar on Shabbos. Because shofar on Shabbos, Chazal said, don't perform this mitzvah, because we're afraid you're going to come to violate Shabbos. Here, Chazal say, don't perform the same mitzvah because we want to make sure you don't mess up this mitzvah tomorrow night, or because we want to make sure you'll feel more motivated to do it tonight. That's very unusual, and it starts a whole discussion whether this is true or not. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has a truth about it, and the second Sa'i before him. And the fact that it doesn't really matter so much, because even Rabbeinu Yonah himself doesn't think this is the halakha. Rabbeinu Yonah says that that's what Chachamim mean, but he believes that Rabbi Gamliel is right, that there's no gezeira anyway. But if there was a gezeira, then that would be what it would mean. It would mean that it would be completely uprooted. The Minchas Elazar, Minchas Rebbe, in his Tshuvas, he writes that that's what the Mishnah is coming to tell you now, like Rabbeinu Yonah. Because the Mishnah tells you a story that Rabbi Gamliel's children came home late from a party, and they said, oh, it's 2 o'clock in the morning here, we didn't say Kriyat Shema. So Rabbi Gamliel said, well, I for sure think you say Kriyat Shema, because I hold this all night. But even Chachamim, who say Chatzos, they also agree with me in theory. So the Menachat Rebbe says, when he says he agrees with me in theory, he means now like Rabbeinu Yonah, that if you don't follow, if you, it's too late already, if you miss the Gzeirah, then they would agree that you should say Kriya Shema B'dieved at 2 o'clock. It's just not Mechatzila, we made a Gzeirah that it shouldn't be done after the Chatzos. So essentially we have really all night for Kriya Shema, either practically, like Rabbi Gamliel, or at least Menachat Torah, like Chachamim, this man is all night. So the Kesef Mishnah, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, says if that's true, so there's something wrong about this idea of Zman Kriya Shema in the morning. It's not fair. We have this whole tension in the morning to get up before Zman Kriya Shema. Why do we have to do that? It doesn't match. It's not parallel. Here, Shachbuchav Chumacha, we would assume the two halves should be comparable to each other. So how come I have all night for Kriya Shema, but during the daytime I only have a few hours? It doesn't match. If we pass them like Rabbi Yoshua, that it's only the first part of the night. So then it would be parallel, first part of the night for Kriya Shema at night, first part of the day for Kriya Shema in the daytime, and it matches. But if you're going to say it's all day, it's all night, so it should be all day also, it's not fair. So the Kesef Mishnah said, that shows you, and this is the third thing that we don't publicize, is that this shows you that really Zman Kriya Shema is Rabban, and that Minhag Torah can take Kriya Shema all day, and the whole Zman idea for Kriya Shema during the daytime, that's only a Din Rabban. So part of why we don't publicize this is because it wasn't accepted at all, even though it was such a pedigree after the Shulchan Aruch, but other poskim didn't accept this. And they said, first of all, it's a problem. The reason why it doesn't have to be parallel is because the language really isn't parallel. They just mentioned together, but they're not the same kind of word. The Shachbucha means you are lying down. Kumacha means you are getting up. It doesn't mean you are standing up. Amida would be the opposite of Shchiva, but Kima means you're getting up. So therefore you have all night because that's when you lie down, and you have the beginning of the day because that's when people get up. But they point out another question. The Magen Avraham says the Shulchan Aruch has got to be wrong about this. The Kesef Mishnah has got to be wrong because according to the Kesef Mishnah, on a level of Minhag Torah, Kriya Shema is running 24/7. It's running all the time. And the Mishnah says explicitly that Kriya Shema is a mitzvah shosei shazman grama. At least in theory, women are parted from Kriya Shema because mitzvah shosei shazman grama. So according to you, Kesef Mishnah, it's going all the time. So how could it be called mitzvah shosei shazman grama? So apparently the answer is, like the Shagashayi discusses, even though it's going all the time, but it's switching off shifts. The nighttime mitzvah and the daytime mitzvah are trading shifts. So that goes back to the question of the two separate mitzvahs or the one mitzvah. So do you say that a mitzvah that's running 24/7 but it's trading off, is that called the mitzvah say shazman grama? Apparently the Kesef Mishnah thought it was. But the other view would be that if it's running 24/7, even if it's shifting between different versions, that's all considered to be not as zman grama, that it's running all the time, and therefore that would be a question on the Kesef Mishnah's position. This was part of the whole a big chunk of the Hasidic Misnagdic debate, a part of what was so aggravating to a lot of the early opponents of Hasidus was that some segments of Hasidus related to Zman Tefillah differently. It's based on a discussion of priorities. Do we say that Kavana and Tefillah, which maybe you would need to wait to get according to this position, is so crucial that it overrides the halacha that would say it's at a certain time? Or do you take the view that no, if it's outside of that time, then it's not tefillah, so you can have all the kavanah in the world, that's not what the halacha requires? And it's obviously also tied into a lot of other issues that were kind of at the heart of the whole Hasidic Misnagdic debate. So in any event, so one of the points that we started last week and didn't get a chance to really look at it all, so this is a newer point, is the question of, so what about Kriya Shema at night? So we said there's no Zman, so that's as far as when it ends, so it goes all night. But what about when does it start? So that part is really the first word of Shas, Me'e Masai, but we fly by that very quickly to get to the whole machlokes about when it ends. But when it starts is very consequential. Because apparently when it starts is Tzeis HaKochavim. It's not so clear from the Mishnah. The Mishnah has a little bit of a code to tell you when it is. It says that when the Kohanim go in to eat their Truma, so that's when Kriya Shema starts. So we don't know when that is. The Gemara tells us that's Tzeis HaKochavim. That we have different markers as to when the night begins. So when the sun starts to set, we call that Shkia. And then we have the twilight zone. And then when the stars come out, that's called Tesha Kochavim, that's when Shabbos ends, etc. So of course, it's a machlokus when Shkia is, a machlokus when Tesha Kochavim is, etc. It's a machlokus how long it is. And even Tesha Kochavim, we have different versions, big stars, small stars, but roughly speaking, so this is the terminology. So essentially, when the stars come out, that's when Kriya Shema can be recited. And before that, it doesn't seem like you can fulfill the mitzvah. So this is a big question on our practice, because we've all seen very fine, upstanding Jews go to shul for Ma'ariv and recite Kriya Shema together with Ma'ariv, and it's not necessarily safe yet. It may not even be Shkia. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Very often, especially this time of year, Friday night, it's not even Shkia. So people are going to shul and saying Kriya Shema, and it seems to be explicitly against the Mishnah. So how does that work? So this is not a new question. This is a question that the Rishonim dealt with. The Rishonim probably dealt with it more, because then there was no artificial lighting, so people really did not stay out at night. So an early Ma'ariv was much more common than it is nowadays. So how are people going to shul while it's still light outside, davening Ma'ariv, and reciting Kriya Shema together with that Ma'ariv? How does that work? So the Rishonim dealt with this question. The topic of the first Machlokas Rishonim and Shash, because Machlokas Rashi and the first Tosfos and Shash, and the third Rashi. And what we do is like neither of them. We don't really follow either Rashi or Tosfos on this, but just to understand their positions, so Rashi and Tosfos take completely different approaches to this question. So Rashi, first of all, first question you can ask is, so when Kriya Shema is recited in Shul early, do you fulfill Kriya Shema with that recitation? So Rashi takes the view that the answer is no. So if the answer is no, so now he generates two more questions by saying that. So if the answer is no, so I have two questions. First of all, why do we bother saying Kriya Shema in Shul then? If it's not effective, what's the point? And when do we fulfill the obligation? We have an outstanding mitzvah, so when does it get done? So first of all, why do we say it if it's not effective? So Rashi says the following. Rashi doesn't give the answer which you may have been more likely to guess. There's an easier approach. You could say it's because we have an obligation of Smichas Gula Tefillah, that we want that the Shmoneh Esrei should be in a structure together with Berachas Kriya Shema first. And that would be an answer that has a lot to be said for, but that's not what Rashi says. Rashi says that the reason is because it serves the role of Ashrei. When we recite Mincha every day, so Mincha is essentially just Shmoneh Esrei. We could just daven Shmoneh Esrei and that would be Mincha. But we don't want to do that. The Talmud Yerushalmi has an expression that we want Lahamid Tfilah Mitok Divrei Torah, that we want that our Tfilah should be in the context of Divrei Torah. And this is consistent with the idea of the Mishnah in the beginning of the fifth parak of Brachos tells us that Parak Ein Omdin, the Mishnah begins by saying Ein Omdin L'Hispalo, that one should not get up to daven if one is not in a mindset that's conducive to davening. So if one is very concerned about something, or one's very sad, or one's very frivolous, one's in a mood that's not conducive to davening, so you're not supposed to jump right into tefillah. So better that you should have some Divrei Torah before tefillah, so you'll be in the proper mindset. But not all Divrei Torah are appropriate for this. If you're going to get involved in a tzos, so it's going to be hard for you to concentrate in Shmoneh Esrei, because you'll be thinking about how to answer up the tzos. So it should really be Divrei Torah that are pretty straightforward, that's not so lumdish, so you're not going to be distracted by that. So something like Ashrei, you have a selection from Tehillim, and Gemara says that to say Ashrei three times a day is a tremendous school you get in Talmud Haba. So that sounds like a good idea. So say Ashrei, that will put our tefillah in the context of Divrei Torah. So when you daven Ma'ariv, you don't have Ashrei, but you have Kriya Shema. And Kriya Shema can serve a dual purpose. It's the purpose of fulfilling Kriya Shema, and it's the Ashrei for Ma'ariv that puts our tefillah in the context of Divrei Torah. So says Rashi, that's why we bother. When we say, when we daven Ma'ariv in shul early, we say Kriya Shema, we don't take it out, even though it's before the Zman, because we want to be Ma'ariv tefillah mitoch Divrei Torah. It's going to be our Ashrei. Okay, again, why he doesn't say Smith School tefillah is a good topic for discussion, but that's not what he says. So when do you fulfill the mitzvah? So what about that? You have an obligation of Kriya Shema. So says Rashi, I'll tell you when. When you go to bed at night, you say Kriya Shema al-Hamita, So that's the practice the Gemara says in Brachos Daf Daled, that it's recommended that one say Kriya Shema on his bed before going to sleep. So it says Rashi, that's when we'll fulfill the obligation of Kriya Shema. So Tosus, you mentioned Tosus over there, the first Tosus in Shas, Tosus doesn't like Rashi's opinion at all, and takes the opposite approach. And Tosus's approach is that you are in fulfillment of Kriya Shema when you daven Ma'ariv early. Now the interesting thing about the structure of the debate is that when Tosus takes aim at Rashi, he doesn't really take aim at his issue of whether you're Yotze or not. He's more concerned about his alternative suggestions. So this idea, Kriya Shema L'Amitza, you're the Yotze with that, says Tosus, that can't be. And he has four issues with that. So first of all, the first concern, it's a little hard to understand because Rashi says this, Rashi acknowledges this. And he says that Kriya Shema that you say L'Amitza, that's only one paragraph. So how can you fulfill the obligation of Kriya Shema with one paragraph? So it's hard to raise that as an objection on Rashi, because Rashi says in his language that the Kriya is Parsha Rishona al Mitzaso Yotze. So he clearly knows that it's one paragraph, and still he's advocating that as Kriya Shema. And that's why many of the later Svarim say, you see that Rashi's position is that Kriya Shema min HaTorah is the first paragraph. But even if that's the position, so it still doesn't explain, you still have an obligation, at least mid-Rabbanan, to say the rest of it. So what about that? So apparently for the Rabbanan, he's willing to let you have it before the Zman. And it's only the Raisa part that he wants you to come back and say later. So he feels that only the first paragraph is not. So for that, you should be makbid to say again after dark when you go to sleep. So that was one problem Tosus has with Rashi. Second problem Tosus has is, what about Birchas Kriya Shema? Birchas Kriya Shema, you don't recite on Kriya Shema L'Amitza, and that bothers him as well. Now here again, you can have an answer that maybe Birchas Kriya Shema, as we mentioned before, maybe it's not a din in Kriya Shema, maybe it's a din in Tefillah, and therefore you recite it during Zman Tefillah, during Zman of Ma'ariv, so that's effective for that, and you don't have to say it in connection with Kriya Shema. There were some Rishonim, the Rush course from Rav Amram Gaon, writes an interesting idea that if you're not saying Birchas Kriya Shema together with Kriya Shema, then you should make a normal bracha. He says, "Asher Kedushanu Mitzvoso V'Tzivanu Al Mitzvos Kriya Shema." That's an unusual type of position. He's basically assuming that Birchas Kriya Shema does fulfill the role of a bracha for Kriya Shema, in addition to other things. And if you're not saying that, then you have to make a normal bracha. It's generally not accepted, but that's an idea that he has. The third problem that Tosus has is that there is a machlokas also in Daf Daled in Mesechus Brachos about the role of Smichas Gula Tefillah when it comes to Ma'ariv. That we take it as a given that when it comes to Shachris, so we have to have Kriya Shema first, and the brachos of Kriya Shema lead into Ma'ariv, and so we call Smichas Gula Tefillah. So it's machlokas from the Gemara whether we require that for Ma'ariv as well. And the issue has to do with the whole structure of Ma'ariv, that if we say that we do want to have Smichas Gula Tefillah, so then we'll have Kriya Shema and then Shemoneh Esrei. But if we don't require Smichas Gula Tefillah, so then the alternative structure the Gemara mentions is called Tefillos Be'emtza Tiknum. Then maybe we should have Tefillos in the middle. That we'll have Kriya Shema in the morning, then we'll have Shemoneh Esrei for Shacharis, Mincha in the afternoon, and then Ma'ariv. And then before you go to sleep, again Kriya Shema. So you'll have Kriya Shema as the bookends, and all the Tefillos will be in the middle. So we don't accept that position. We assume that we do require Smichas Gula Tefillah. So part of that psak, as Tosus notes, is that it's Shema and then Shemoneh Esrei. According to Rashi, you'll have Shemoneh Esrei in Shul, and then you'll say Shema afterwards. It's an end run around the psak of the Gemara, and that doesn't seem to be right. Fourth question Tosus has, a little mysterious. Tosus says that the Gemara says that Kriya Shema L'Amitza is only done as a protection. It's not really a chiyuv. And a Talmud Chacham, who's learning at that time anyway, doesn't have to recite Kriya Shema L'Amitza. He's involved in other psukim, he doesn't have to say Kriya Shema L'Amitza. So why is that such a problem? It's unclear. Sounds like Tosus is worried that people don't necessarily say this, and therefore to rely on it for Kriya Shema is a problem. There are some who say, someone would say for that the reason we're makbid on Shavuos night to daven late, as opposed to every other night of the year, is because he's assuming, like Rashi, that we are Yotze. If we daven early, we'll say Kriya Shema, Kriya Shema L'Amitza. Shavuos night, people don't go to sleep. They don't say Kriya Shema L'Amitza. Therefore, we have to daven late to make sure people will say Kriya Shema on time. an interesting idea. So in any case, so that's Tosis's approach to Rashi. So Tosis says, I don't like that approach. So then you're left with a question. So when are you going to take Kriya Shma? So it says Tosis, you have to take Kriya Shma in Shul. That's what does it. So how does that work? It's against the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, it's got to be before, it's got to be after Seif Shekel Chavim, and it's surely davening earlier. So one approach Tosis has is that of the Ri. So the Ri says, that no, we don't paskin like that Mishnah. That if you keep going on Daf Beis and Brachos, so you'll see there are other opinions in the Gemara that have a different approach. And maybe we paskin like one of those other opinions, and therefore my Kriya Shema starts earlier. It's a hard position to maintain. Those other approaches are just as mysterious as the Truma one, when the Ani goes in to eat his dinner, and it's hard to imagine that, well, we're cheshbing out when that is, and that's when we say Kriya Shema. So the more workable approach is that of Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam's problem, Rabbeinu Tam's approach has a lot of questions. Rabbeinu Tam says as follows. Why is it that people can recite Kriya Shema early? Because in the fourth parak of Brachos, there is a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim. That according to Chachamim, the Zman Mincha is until it gets dark. You say Mincha up until dark. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says it goes up until Plag HaMincha, which is a halachic hour and a quarter before dark. So perhaps those people who are saying Kriya Shema early, they're paskening like Rabbi Yehuda. So they have that extra hour and a quarter there, and they'll say Kriya Shema then. So that's a chiddush in a couple of different ways. Because, first of all, even if they can accept the Yehuda's position, so that's about when Mincha ends. It's a chiddush to say that just because Mincha ends, Maariv starts. They don't necessarily have to connect to each other. And the Beis Halevi has a very interesting tshuva trying to explain what this means. And then it's a chiddush on top of that. Because even if we acknowledge that Maariv would start immediately when Mincha ends, who says that Kriya Shema starts when Maariv starts? They're two separate obligations. Maariv is based on the burning of the fats and the korbanos. And Kriya Shema is about Peshach Bacha. So who says it's because it's Maariv time means that it's Peshach Bacha. So it's two chidushim in Rabbeinu Tam to say that Mincha ending means Maariv starts, and to say that Maariv starting means Kriya Shema Kriya. But in any event, so as Tosfos goes on to say, but hold on a second, but the same person who will be saying Kriya Shema when it's dark will also be davening Mincha the next day up until dark. So apparently he doesn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. He holds like Chacham. So the main time says, well, we have a good solution for this. Because in the context of this machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, so the Gemara has a very unusual statement. What's the halacha like? What's the final resolution of this machlokus? Says the Gemara in Brachos Daf Chav Zayin, David Kemar Avid, with the Avid Kemar Avid. You follow Chachamim, that's great. You follow the Yehuda, that's great too. They're both valid. So apparently I can follow either approach. What does that mean? So that's a very surprising statement. And the Shagas Aryeh, and some of the Gimel Shagas Aryeh had a big problem with this. It says the Shagas Aryeh, why does the Gemara say you can follow either opinion? Because the Gemara is talking about Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim fighting over Zman Tefillah. Zman Tefillah is a Chiyuv D'Rabbanan. So a Chiyuv D'Rabbanan, if we're not sure, so you could be Maker or you could follow either view. But now he's trying to apply it to Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema is D'Raisa. D'Raisa, you have to be Machmir. So how could he take this rule from Tefillah and apply it to Kriya Shema when Tefillah is D'Rabbanan and Kriya Shema is Min HaTorah? So says the Shagas Aryeh, that shows you that Rabbeinu Tam holds that Kriya Shema is D'Rabbanan. Now, we don't accept that view, so that's why Rabbeinu Tam is wrong. So maybe we could try to defend Rabbeinu Tam. We could say that he's really coming from a different approach. And there is a fascinating piece of Stipler Gaon, his first piece on Shas, his first piece on Brachos, discusses the question of somebody who wants to switch off from day to day. So let's say today I want to daven Mincha up right before dark, and tomorrow I want to daven Maariv after Plag. I want to do one way today, one way tomorrow. I want to switch back and forth. So is that appropriate? So he points out a very interesting analysis. He says it depends. He says if you look, the Rishonim have different ways of explaining this idea. Ovid Kamar Ovid, Ovid Kamar Ovid. So the Rishonim explain it differently. And they explain it through their comparisons. If you look in the Rush, and look in the Meiri, in the fourth paragraph, each one brings a different parallel case. And the parallel cases they bring are instructive. The Rush compares this to a case called the Sedge of Igogolos, means a skull and a spine. Let's say you have a spine of an animal, and it's missing a vertebra, more missing a vertebrae. Does that mean that it's considered to be deficient, that it's lacking, or is that not really significant? That's machlokas beis Hillel and beis Shammai. How much has to be missing in order for it to be considered to be deficient? So who cares? The spine of an animal is missing something. What difference does it make? Well, it affects two areas of halacha. It affects kashrus. If it's missing, it's going to be a trefa. And it affects tumah. That if you have a skeleton and it's missing, it's incomplete, then it's not going to be mitame. So which side is lakula, which side is lachomer? So it goes both ways. If you say it's deficient, then it's a kula for trefus and it's a chumra for tumah. The other way, it's a kula for tumah and it's a chumra for trefus. If you say it's not deficient, so then it's a chumra for tumah, but it's a kula for trefus. So either way, either opinion cuts both ways. So says the Gemara in this context, this machlokas beis Hillel and beis Shammai, the Gemara says, the halacha is really like beis Hillel. But if you want, you can follow beis Shammai also. That's also an accepted view. But you can mix and match. If you take the kulas of both, the Gemara says that's really bad. If you take the kulas of both, say it's sufficient when I want it to be for tumah, but it's not for the sake of kashrus. And to take the chumras of both, that's also, doesn't make any sense. It's completely illogical. So to say it will be a trefa, but it is mitame, that's not going to make sense either. So you can follow beis Hillel, you can follow beis Shammai, but pick one. So that's one model. So that's one way to look at it. That's the way the Rush looks at it. The Meiri uses a different model. And this is a case, the Mishnah has in Tyrus, it's known as the case of the two paths, called Shnei Shvilim. It's also a Gemara in Mishachas Tzachim and Daf Yud. The Gemara has the following case, very interesting. Let's say there's two paths, one over here, we'll call path A, and one over here, we'll call path B. And one of these paths is Tameh. Let's say a dead body was taken on one of these paths, one path is Tameh. So if somebody comes down path A, and he comes to the rabbi, and the rabbi comes to the rabbi and says, I walk down path A, I know one of the two paths is Tameh, I walk down one path, am I Tameh or am I Tar? So I don't know which path it is. So the rule is, they have a Safek Tuma versus a rabbin, so it's a public place, and they're not sure, the rule is, Tar, he's fine. Okay, I tell him to go home, he's fine. The next day, somebody comes to me, and he says, he took path B. And he says he doesn't know what the story is. So I can tell him again, okay, Safek Tuma versus a rabbin, you're okay. Even though they can't both be okay, I know that one of these paths is coming, but it doesn't matter. Because I'm not actually saying that I know they're okay. I'm saying the rule is, Safek, you're okay. So it's a Safek for the first guy, it's a Safek for the second guy, and that's fine. It doesn't matter that they can't both really be Tar. The halacha allows me to call each one Tar. And it's only if they both come together, they take a race, and they both come at the same time, so okay, we both got here, one of us took A, one took B, what's the story? So then the Gemara says, that's too much already. Then I can't tell them they're both Tar. Even though, as Tosus points out, logically it's not that different. It's just too blatant to say you're both okay when they're clearly not. That's maybe on a level they're up on too much to say. So it seems they're both Tameh. It's not clear what they're talking. It seems they're both Tameh. So, but again, logically it could have been they're both Tar, but the same logic. It's just two in your face. So the Meiri uses this model to compare the Pesach by Tefillah. It says the stipler, a fascinating point. Let's say I want to switch off from day to day. Let's say I want to do one thing on Monday, I want to do one thing on Tuesday. Can I do that? So it depends which comparison you're using. If you use the Rush's comparison about the skull and the spine, so then what's the Gemara telling you? The Gemara is telling you Paskin. Pick Rabbi Yehuda or pick Chachamim. They're both valid shitas, but pick a shita and stick with it. So then it's not right to switch off from Monday to Tuesday because you should pick a position and keep that position unless you legitimately change your mind. But to go back and forth from one day to the next isn't really right, because you're supposed to pick one view. Now your friend can pick the other view because he believes the other way. That's legitimate. They're both legitimate shitas, but you should pick one. If you take the Meiri's model, so it's not about stock. It's like a case of tuma. It's about sofek. So we're saying sofek derabanan lahakim. So today we can be lenient one way, and tomorrow we can be lenient the other way. And there's nothing wrong about that. It's the same thing as one guy coming to me today and say he went on path A, and one guy came to me tomorrow and said he's on path B. By the same token, he says the same way you can't tell them both together that they're okay. So you shouldn't daven in the same, we call it tired to the sasre, that you daven mincha after a plague and daven meyer before dark, that's taking both the same day, because that's too much. Even though practically we often allow that on Friday night when we're stuck for various reasons, even we try to avoid it then also, but we find more leniency by Friday night. But in general, we try to avoid that. It's called a tarte d'assassin. So this gives us two different ways of looking at the issue. Either we could say it's an issue of stock, in which case you could switch from day to day, or you could say it's an issue of suffix, in which case, I'm sorry, in which case stock you shouldn't switch, in case of suffix you can switch. So this could answer the Sargasayi's problem. Sargasayi says, how could you say this principle applies to Kriya Shema Daraisim? Well, that's only a problem if you say it's about Suffolk. But if you say it's about Sark, then presumably you can legitimately, even with a Din Daraisa, switch off from one day to the next. Rav Nelson Gestetner, in one of his tshuvas, she points out that another reason why he's not so worried about the Tarta Dasasri idea about switching back and forth, even within the same day, but from day to day, it points out that it's not really two kulas. That we, in our minds, we identify kula with convenience. That if it makes life easier, it's a kula. So, but that's not really what it means. A kula in halacha, if you have more time to do a mitzvah, that's probably a kula. If we say the zman allows you to do the mitzvah, that's why that's why we have sechumra, saying you're mechuyif to do the mitzvah during more time. So just because it makes your life easier to have a greater window to say it in, that doesn't mean that it's a kula. It doesn't mean there's necessarily a contradictory kula to say you can have mincha and ma'ar at the same time. Maybe you can do that as a chumrah, you're mechuyev in more mitzvahs, you're mechuyev in a mitzvah for a longer period of time. That the language of two contradictory kulas, it doesn't necessarily have to apply in that case. There are other approaches to this question as well. But we're just about out of time. Just mention that, again, as we alluded to before, so halacha, we don't really follow Rashi or Tosfos completely. We really follow Rashi more in that we do take the position that we're not yotzei the Kriya Shema that we say early. We're required to say Kriya Shema again. But we don't wait till Kriya Shema Lamita. We follow the Eitzah that Rabbeinu Yonah and other Rishonim say, that we should say Kriya Shema after dark, and the shul announced after whatever 9:36, say Kriya Shema again. Preferably, it should then really be before you eat. It should be really as soon as you remember, as soon as you recognize, and it should be then. And then it's also machlokas whether it should be with a brachos or not. And as Moshe Feinstein points out in the Tshuva, they're both valid shitas out of Yom Hazeh. They're those who do either one. It's probably more common, it's based on the announcements that you usually hear in shul, more common the opinion that it should just be the three paragraphs without the brachas. But again, you do have a shita that it should be three paragraphs with the brachas, and Moshe has that shuva where he mentions both.
Of course, the day of that, if you don't say it, you say it early.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need to say it early.
Correct, but it's not, it doesn't seem to be that anyone passes like that, but the mind of that Rashi holds, this is our Benetam and the Ri holds your Yotze, but the practice doesn't seem to follow that. Okay, so we will stop here.